During the month of May, high school and college students don caps and gowns of varying hues and march down an aisle to pomp and circumstance. While students sit patiently, or perhaps more often impatiently, to receive their diplomas, they are typically addressed by a commencement speaker. Earlier this month, Melody Musgrove, director of the Office of Special Education Programs for the U.S. Department of Education, was the commencement speaker for the College of Education and Health Professions at the University of Arkansas. While she was in town, Musgrove stopped by Studio 123 to speak with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. During their conversation, Musgrove discussed how she prepares to deliver a commencement speech.
I love giving a commencement address. It's really a great opportunity, first of all, because I'm a teacher. You know, I was a classroom teacher. Both my parents were teachers. I have three nieces, and they are teachers. So I will always consider myself a teacher. So just an opportunity to get to speak with people who are just entering their field, whether it's healthcare or education, is a great opportunity for me. So I was really excited when Dean Smith invited me to speak at the commencement. But I think about, you know, what would have motivated me or inspired me whenever I was sitting in their place. You know, the first thing is to be brief, because honestly, I know they are just wanting to get that diploma and get out, so I want to be brief. I remember thinking when I was sitting in their seat that I wondered why we had to have a commencement speaker. Couldn't we just get our diploma and leave? But, you know, I've tried to think very carefully about what are the things that I would have wanted to hear or needed to hear now that I'm looking in retrospect. What would have been some things that I should have heard at that time. And I think, you know, one of the main messages is for them to really think for themselves. I think we live in an age when it is increasingly difficult to get to the truth. I mean, there's, you know, with the 24-hour media, there's just so much information out there. And nowadays, people have a tendency to either watch or read, consume the things that agree with their positions rather than really seeking to find the truth. And that's what I want to encourage the students tomorrow to do, is to think for themselves. Don't believe everything you read. And, you know, even if it's a professional journal, you know, read the research yourself. Dig into the data. Think about the way things work. There are many practices in education and healthcare that really don't have a strong background in evidence. Now, I want them to challenge. I want them to challenge the status quo, to be willing to call out, you know, whether it's improper practices, whether it's injustice. You know, I want them to be courageous. I think we need more leaders, frankly. And so I'm going to challenge them to be really strong leaders, whether it's a teacher leader, you know, a audiologist leader, a principal leader, regardless of what their field is. We just need more people to be really strong leaders.
And as you said, you know, preparing for commencement, you think about your own commencement and kind of your path to get to where you are now in your education. And reflecting on that, can you tell me a little bit about, you know, how you decided to become an educator and maybe even particularly the field of special education?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not the path that many people would think. You know, I know a lot of special education teachers who have known they wanted to be a special education teacher since as long as they can remember. As I said, I do think that education was a natural fit for me because my parents were educators. Both my parents grew up during the Great Depression. My dad served in World War II. They both grew up poor. There's no way my dad could have gone to college if it had not been, you know, for a grateful nation that established the GI Bill. And so he was the first person in his family to go to college. So he always believed that, both my parents, you know, just believed that it was the most important thing that we could ever do. And so I don't remember a time when I didn't know, you know, as a young child, I don't remember a time that I didn't know I was going to college. So number one, just they were such believers in education. And number two, my parents were both, we lived in rural Mississippi, and my parents were both real champions of the underdog. You know, if there were people in the community or children at school that, you know, didn't have the things that they needed, mother and daddy, while they didn't make much money themselves, they were always very caring and concerned about people that the rest of society seemed to have kind of forgotten about. So I think just that growing up in that kind of environment had a real impact on me. I actually did not major in special education as an undergrad. I majored in English, and I went and applied for a job. And I remember this is a long time ago, over 30 years ago. I went and applied for a job, and the school said, well, we don't have an English job, but we have a special education job. And back then, anybody who would take a class in special education, they would put you in there, and then people would usually hope they got, you know, another job doing something else. And I absolutely think it was fate. I mean, I immediately knew that it was what I was meant to do. I never tried, you know, never looked at doing anything else other than special education from that point on. You know, parents would say, wow, you know, I just had a knack for being able to reach children. And I think having not been trained in special education, I came at it from a very different perspective. I came at it from the general ed perspective that all kids are kids first. And during that time, the special education was much more segregated than it is now. And so I began to look at the students that I had and thought, why are they in special education? I mean, they clearly have disabilities, but they can learn. Just because, you know, the vast majority of students that we serve in special education don't have cognitive disabilities. And so they can and should be achieving to high academic standards, but many of them weren't and aren't. And so, it was fateful that I was given that job in special education. It completely changed the course of my life. I love it. It's the only thing I've ever wanted to do, and I'm very fortunate to be a special ed teacher in my mind who works for the U.S. Department of Education.
Now, I'm sure a lot of our listeners aren't incredibly familiar with what your specific office does. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Absolutely. The Office of Special Education Programs is responsible for implementing programs under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA. And our programs actually serve children beginning at birth. The Early Intervention Program serves children from birth to age 3. And then the School Age Program, or Part B, picks up at age 3 and serves them into adulthood, age 21, or depending on state law, some states have laws that allow them to be served until age 24. So we have all of the formula grants that are administered. $11.5 billion of IDEA money is administered in our office. We have the formula grants that flow through to states and to lead agencies who provide the early intervention programs. We also have a discretionary grant program. We fund a lot of the technical assistance centers around the country and other programs that provide support to states. The PROMISE initiative that is here in Arkansas is also administered in our office under the Part D program. So that's basically what we do. We monitor and provide technical assistance to states on ensuring that IDEA is implemented.
And you mentioned having programs for children as young as infants, mm-hmm. and that seems just fascinating to me. What is the importance of having that early intervention?
Early intervention is absolutely critical. You know, making sure that children are exposed to experiences that enrich them, that enable them to develop and grow. It's important for all children, but for children with disabilities, it's absolutely essential. For instance, if a child has either a language disability or a communication disability or autism or whatever the problem might be, getting them intervention early is just so important because it enables them many times to enter school ready to succeed just like their peers. We actually know that we can prevent some disabilities. If students get some of the services that they need early, they can overcome those problems and be ready to start kindergarten or first grade on the same level as their peers. And we know that outcomes are improved if students get intervention early. If we identify what they need and can provide those services early, that life outcomes, long-term outcomes are often improved greatly because those early years are so important.
Special education seems like such a broad topic because no child is the same and they need different things. So how do you, create programs to fit the needs of such, a wide range of children?
Well, that's a great question, and that's why the law, IDEA, specifically says that each student will have an individualized instruction. So, yes, that's a challenge for teachers, but, I mean, we know that we can design curriculum and instruction in ways that enable the largest percentage of students to be able to access the content, to be able to demonstrate what they know and can do. So it is challenging, but, that's what special education does best, is individualize instruction and provide the kinds of supports and services that kids need to be successful.
Is there any particular programs or research out there right now that you're particularly excited about that's happening in special education?
Well, this field is always evolving. We've had, special education, what we now call is IDEA, since 1975, and we've learned so much through the years. What we know is that students with disabilities do best when they have access to the general curriculum and when they are held to high academic standards and they learn beside their peers, their typical peers. We know that they do so much better when they're in a very challenging and enriching environment. So some of the latest research that's out that's really fascinating is that when historically we have believed that the best way to teach reading to individuals with intellectual or cognitive disabilities was to teach them sight words. And so that's kind of the way we have focused our instruction. There's new research that came out last year that said that students with intellectual disabilities actually learn to read just like everybody else learns to read. So just teaching them sight words is not necessarily the right strategy. They just need more time. But there's been kind of this historic belief that students with intellectual disabilities might not ever learn to read. But now, you know, so the research that's kind of changing the way we practice is so important. And that's another thing that I want to encourage the graduates tomorrow is to really dig into what research is telling us. There's, you know, a lot of evidence out there about what works, and that's what we should be applying, whether it's in healthcare or in education.
In your current role, I know you've been working with accountability. You want to talk to me a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I'd love to. That's kind of been my biggest, my highest priority there at OSEP. You know, when I began teaching special education, the total of my training that was provided by my school district was around compliance. You know, what do you need to do just to meet the legal requirements of the law? And so special education has always focused on compliance, on making sure that we got those procedural requirements right. But that has not translated into better educational outcomes for students with disabilities. Back in 75, when children were being prevented from attending school just because they had a disability, okay, that fixed that because we stopped that. The law did accomplish that goal. But it has not turned into better outcomes for students learning to read and do math. And like I said, most students with disabilities can and they should be achieving those skills. So now, instead of just focused on procedural compliance, we're going to be focusing our monitoring in states on how well are children learning. I mean, what are the outcomes? Are students with disabilities, as I said, how are they performing on reading and math and graduation rate? In most states, many states, there are really big gaps between the achievement of students with disabilities and students without disabilities. Now, I've been asked before, okay, well, I mean, they're in special education. Don't you think there should be a gap? The gaps are unacceptably large. Like I said, most students can learn to read and do math, but yet they're not doing it. And so, you know, and it's not their fault that they're not doing it. We're not providing the kinds of instruction and services that they need. The teachers are not getting the knowledge and skills and supports that they need to ensure that they can deliver instruction to ensure that all children are successful. So it's a fundamental shift in special education. I mean, going from being focused on procedural compliance to also bringing into focus how well students are learning is a big shift. It doesn't mean that the procedural requirements are not important. They still are, because we have a legal obligation to protect the rights of children and families, ensure that they get the services that they need. But again, it's about bringing it into balance. We've been completely focused on compliance, and now at a national level, we have very high levels of compliance. We're at 97, 98, 99% of compliance with, you know, meeting the timelines that are within the law, ensuring that children get timely services, ensuring that due process and complaint resolution happens within the timelines. All of those procedural requirements we are doing very well on in general. But again, now it's time to focus on something else as we did on those procedural requirements. What we focus on is what gets better.
And you mentioned that, you know, the teachers, they didn't have, like, the support that they needed to do this. Do you think that part of the problem was people not realizing, you know, that these students can learn more than what they're being taught? Is it just, I guess, going in with that mindset so you don't even try to look for other ways?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. Is there, and it's not just in education. I think there's mm-hmm. a general misunderstanding in this country about people with disabilities. I mean, almost 70% of adults with disabilities in our country are unemployed. And remember, that's people that just have a physical disability. That's not people with necessarily intellectual disabilities. So, I mean, that's just unacceptable. When you can't work, that translates into a life of poverty. So, again, this is the United States. We can do much better than that. So I think there is a general expectation in our country that needs to be changed. After World War II, when all the veterans were coming back from World War II, we saw a big shift in disability rights, in rehabilitation, in education that kind of jump-started the movement toward special education. So I'm hoping that now, you know, unfortunately, we have so many veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan with injuries and disabilities. And so I'm hoping that we will see another revival in this country around making sure that we provide the kinds of supports as a society that people with disabilities need. My dad was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis when I was a senior in high school. And he died at the age of 85, so he lived a very long life, my entire adult life, with very significant physical disabilities. So I watched the challenges that he faced, and I hope that we as a nation, you know, will come to provide. I mean, frankly, all of us are going to be either beneficiaries or victims of the system that we are creating. And, what I hope is that we create a more inclusive and tolerant and compassionate society that really makes sure that those who need the support get it.
That was Melody Musgrove, Director of the Office of Special Education Programs for the U.S. Department of Education, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda earlier this month. She came to Fayetteville to deliver a commencement address to graduates of the University of Arkansas's College of Education and Health Professions. You can find out more information about Musgrove's office at ed.gov.